And good evening, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk on a Tuesday. I'm Scott Beatty alongside Lauren Tate. We are with you till 6 o'clock. We weren't supposed to be here originally, but it's a little too cold for Illinois baseball to have their opener. No, they already had their home opener, just a ball game at Illinois Field. So we're here instead. Sorry if you wanted Illinois baseball. You want to go see them. They're tomorrow, now playing at 1 o'clock tomorrow against CSU Northridge.
Be a little warmer then, won't it?
A little bit. I mean, softball got theirs in today. They're playing their doubleheader, but baseball said, nah. They were practicing today, though. And we'll hear a little bit from Illinois baseball later on in the program. So, welcome aboard, and we're glad you are along. Later in the hour, we will catch up with Gordon Voigt from WAND-TV and also catch up with Natalie Walsh. She is the head coach of Illinois Women's Gymnastics. Big Ten Championships coming up this weekend at the State Farm Center. In between, you're welcome to join in. 356-9397 is the number to call. As always, you can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Illinois softball did win their opener of a doubleheader today in their first game of the year at Eichelberger Field. 6-4, the final over UIC. The Flames game two is just getting going. And Carly Thomas among those at homer for the Illini in their win. And game two, they will have Muzan pitching there as well. So that is a little bit of what's going on. Kind of a quiet day in terms of headlines, as I think just the nation takes a pause and waits for the Sweet 16.
Well, I was going to say, we've had so many. I mean, when you have five, six, seven a day, and now we just can relax for a couple of days, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, Oklahoma star Trae Young is leaving for the NBA, and also freshman forward Mohamed Bamba from Texas says he is headed for the NBA, and they'll now go find an agent to talk to, because I'm sure none of those guys that are leaving for the NBA have ever talked to an agent before, so they're just going to be out there going, well, now what do I do, right?
I think they know what they're doing.
Yeah, you were just saying.
Just waiting for the season to get over so they can get cash in.
Yeah, hockey. We were just talking off air. Hockey players apparently can get agents.
And get agents, and they can go into the draft. And if they don't like their draft position, they can come back to college.
Does this just solve it? If we just
I don't know if it solves it, but it makes it better. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Yeah,
I mean, I think you need an agent because you need to have somebody give you an idea where you stand. Maybe you can find that, you know, the problem is it solves the problem of getting agents surreptitiously when nobody knows, you know, under the table. So I like it, but I haven't studied it. I just heard about it today that it was a better way of doing it. Let them get an agent and let them come back from the draft.
Some recruiting news. Kedrick Prince reporting from Orange and Blue News that an Illini basketball target in Blake Hinson, who's for the 2019 class, is going to reclassify for 2018. A four-star recruit, 6'7". He tells Kedrick Prince, Illinois is in my final three schools along with Seton Hall and Washington State, and we'll get visits planned soon. Scott Ritchie had written about Blake Hinson earlier last month in February, saying he would be certainly helpful to anybody that would go after him. He also has offers from Miami, Virginia Tech, Florida State, and Georgia Tech. He's also a tight end. He's a football prospect as well. But
good. We need physical guys.
Yeah. Is anybody who's not a wiry wide receiver, but a tight end.
That's right.
That means he's built.
Tougher the better.
Yeah. Gordon Voigt was at the state championship, so we'll get his take on Io DeSumo. We were talking about this yesterday, Lauren, that Io kind of hanging around the perimeter during those ball games and didn't look like he was very aggressive. Is that something going on where he's a little timid right now, or is that the way he plays?
I can't answer that, but I don't know how you can score 61 points and not be aggressive and then come right back with a 50-point game. He looks slender. He looks I don't know how much the injury has caused him to back off from his aggressiveness, because he was not aggressive in the semifinal game of the state tournament at all. He did finish with 13 points, but it's just that he's not the tenacious kind of defender, aggressive rebounder. That he is 6'4". You'd think in high school you can get a lot of rebounds if you work at it, but he stayed on the perimeter most of the time.
I saw some chatter out there about Samba Kane, that people feeling high on who the Illini are getting in him. I don't know yet, because he's going to be green. He's going to be a freshman.
I can't judge for you. I just don't know what to expect from him. I've never seen him play, really. And I don't know if he's going to be another project or if he's going to be a good enough defender that you won't worry about his offense. If a guy doesn't if you're playing under the basket, they have to guard you, okay? So this isn't a case of them putting five people on the other four. You got to guard him. But I don't know if he's very effective. Is going to be a very effective scorer. I wouldn't think so.
Sports Talk here with Lauren Tate and myself, Scott Beatty, and we've got an open line right now if you want to weigh in on anything. 356-9397 is the number to call, and you can text us. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. We take you till 6 o'clock, and we'll have news and election coverage tonight, by the way. You still have time to vote till 7 o'clock if you have not done so. So head to the polls, and there's free bus service also all day today. You want to go out there and get that. Illinois baseball tomorrow, 1 o'clock now, after an original 4:30 first pitch scheduled against CSU Northridge. Starting pitcher for the Illini tomorrow, by the way, is Ryan Cutt. Now, Cirilla Watson had been the midweek starter for the Illini, so they are giving the ball to the freshman Ryan Cutt here. So we'll see how that works out for them. Their Friday, Saturday, Sunday starters have been set now for the last several weekends. Still trying to figure out who is that fourth guy or fifth guy as the need comes up in the middle of the week. We'll talk with Dan Hartlett. We'll hear from him a little bit later on. Also, Bren Spillane, who, no surprise, became the third Big Ten player of the week for the Illini in a row.
Missed by one of being National Player of the Week. I want to know what the National Player of the Week did that was better than what he did.
That was somebody from Arizona State.
That's not possible, is it?
And
you go 8-for-8 on one in one day. I mean, how do you top that?
And he, in one of the games from last week, went 0-for-3. I mean, most of the time you look at a guy that got a Player of the Week, he was pretty consistent, had decent games every game. He actually went 0-for-3 in one of his games and still had video game-type numbers.
Well, all those home runs to right field, too. Isn't that interesting for a right-hand hitter?
Yeah. And that's a good sign. When you're going the other way,
that is really a good sign.
You're seeing the ball well.
Right, and you're taking it deep into the plate. Instead of trying to get out in front and pull, you're going to make better contact the longer you wait.
So those guys that are pulling all the time, those are the guys that
are... You can fool.
Right, you can fool them, and they'll hit the mistakes. Mm-hmm. But if
yes.
you fool them...
Right.
And Spillane, like most power hitters, is going to have his share of strikeouts. I mean, that's the nature of that swing. He's not aiming to hit a line drive or a hard ground ball somewhere.
Evidently, he's got a pretty good arc on that swing.
Yeah.
So I only saw him swing the first time I ever saw him swing, I said, oh, my goodness, is that beautiful.
So it's pretty.
He's just gorgeous swing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see everything get put together now for him. And the Illini at 11-5, looking to pick up a midweek win before Big Ten play starts against Northwestern this weekend. I was just occurring to me, too, what were we doing at this time last year? Well, we were still talking about the NIT. You know.
Yeah, we had a special coach, Jamal Walker.
Yeah, with the other coach
who
sitting
cannot,
in the stands.
By the way, coaching the next two games of the NCAA, you know, he's sanctioned for two games. If Illinois qualifies next year for the NCAA, he won't be able to be on the bench for the first two games.
Oh, in the tournament?
Yes, in the tournament. In the NCAA, he was a head coach of the NIT. That's okay. But if Illinois had qualified, let's say, this year for the NCAA or last year, he wouldn't have been able to participate.
And this goes back to?
Oh, boy, I don't know which, you know, you got me there. I don't remember which year, but it's several years ago that he received the sanction.
See, it hasn't been a factor for him.
No, but it will be next year when Illinois qualifies. We are going to next year, aren't we?
I've gotten bitten by the optimism bug before, so
well, you can't really make a judgment right now because we don't have any idea what's going to be the makeup of this team.
Look, Brad Underwood is an optimist, and he should be. But when he rolled in here a year ago and said, "This is a tournament team I've got here," I went, "Okay." And obviously, things didn't go the way he thought.
There were, by the way, 14 Big Ten teams saying that.
Yeah.
That time. I mean, Nebraska was saying it. Penn State was saying it. I mean, you know, right.
But
down
do you
the line.
Think? Okay, there's coaches. They all have to say that, right?
I was saying it.
But some coaches are saying that, and no one in the back of their head. No, I don't have a tournament team. Brad Underwood's pretty convincing. So it'd be a surprise to me if he didn't believe that. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I don't know if he had studied Illinois enough to know.
Yeah.
I didn't know how it would his style would impact the team. It could have, and I don't know, you know, if you could figure out if you win three overtime games instead of losing three overtime games and Nebraska doesn't throw in a ridiculous shot at the end to beat you, who knows? You know, if you get up around 500, who knows? But, of course, you could win 13 games in the Big Ten and not get in.
Yeah, depends on if you're in the right quadrant, to which I agree with your point. If they say the RPI is faulty and then they assign a new system based on quadrants, which are based on the RPI, then why is that any better?
It isn't.
I think by and large, you know, certainly the top teams are the right teams to be in. It's those bubble teams. And then Syracuse, if you don't think they should have been in, they're obviously proving you wrong.
Here's the thing about it. There were teams playing in the NIT that could have won two or three, could have got to the Sweet 16. If Kansas State could get there, if Syracuse had to win three games to get there. If they could win, Louisville could have won. Middle Tennessee, which lost to Louisville in the NIT, could have made it. We're seeing Mississippi State could have made it. Who knows? Who knows who's hot at the end? You pick teams based on what they do for the season, but they play games the way they're playing now.
Gordon Voigt tweeted.
That's different.
Gordon Voigt tweeted out something where there's an adjusted ranking based on how you've played later in the season, what kind of seed you are. Xavier was an 8 seed according to this metric instead of a 1 seed, which maybe explains why they bowed out so early.
Well, if you want to know the answer, check Las Vegas because they aren't concerned what you did in last December.
To the phones.
Where you are now.
To the phones. Carl joins us. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Lauren, I guess I got to play your memory again. The Jamal Walker suspension problem is a result of the Miami game, I believe, 2013.
Yeah, when
NCAA
we lost.
Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Did he get ejected?
I don't think he got ejected, but he got he must have said something.
Really got in the official's face,
mm-hmm.
apparently.
Well,
was it over the call that didn't get reversed or?
Yeah.
Yeah, the out-of-bounds play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for jogging our memories.
Okay. Bye.
That makes sense. I wasn't sure of that, but that's probably right.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk with Gordon Voigt from WAND-TV. You have Sports Talk here on a Tuesday.
Results, interviews, analysis, and more. Our news team's primary election coverage starts tonight at 6 right here on DWS and streaming at WDWS.com.
A Tuesday edition of Sports Talk. Scott and Lauren with you. Thanks so much for being along. We are pleased to be joined by a friend of ours. It's Gordon Voigt. You hear him on and see him on WAND-TV. Gordon, how are you?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Now, what was this thing you tweeted out about an adjusted seed for people? And I was just talking about it. You tweeted out something about Xavier was actually an 8 seed.
So, you know, right now I would like to think that I have at least a shred of respectability for the viewers right now. And if I reveal my obsession with March Madness too much, I'm afraid I'm going to lose that. I've spent up to 9 hours per year, and I reseed every single team in the tournament according to three different metrics. And one of them is called – it's Jeff Sagarin puts out computer rankings. He calls it recently. And so we weighted it toward the end of the season. And so if you're sort of the 32nd team in the metric, that's the equivalent, you know, divide by four. It's an 8 seed. So how I go about it is I reseed everything according to that and a couple other metrics. So Xavier was a 9 seed according to that metric. Florida State was an 8 seed. So I was one of the games that I got correctly. Let's just say that. But, yes, I do reseed the entire tournament. I am that big of a nerd, yes.
Okay, so how many of the 16 do you have?
I only had 10, which I like to think right now I got a couple fingers cut off, but all of my main functions, like my pulmonary system, cardiovascular system, nervous system, is still intact. So I've still got 3 of the 4 Final Four, and I think 6 of the Elite Eight. So, yeah, we did lose a couple digits, but the core teams are still alive, minus Virginia, but we don't need to talk about that.
And who is it that you were believing in that maybe others weren't?
I'd say a team that really got underseeded was Duke. They are almost across the board higher than a two seed in the metrics I looked at. So I have them winning. I like the matchups too. Another team that was incredibly underseeded, according to the metrics that I trust, was Kentucky. You talk about a team that most people had in the 4 or 5 range, and obviously they hit a big, big roadblock about 5 weeks ago. Since then, Coach Cal's done an incredible job, cleaning things up, and according to the Sagarin and Beastly metric, they were a one-seed equivalent. So what that means is, as of lately, they are playing like a one-seed in the tournament. So I had them advancing lead in as well.
Wow, Gordon Voigt is here with us from WAND-TV.
You know, the Sagarin thing gets better as time goes along. When he starts out, it's way off, but by the end, by the end of the season, when he's got everything plugged in, it's not a bad system, I don't think.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because he kind of takes the same approach that I do, which is that he has three different ways of measuring teams, and then he averages those together. I tend to think that the more data points he can get, the better. And so he does a good job, but, you know, he leans heavily on the point spreading games. I don't mean Vegas-wise, but I mean the point differential between two teams.
Yeah.
But he does a nice job of balancing that out with strengths and, like, this recently metric that he introduced.
Well, you know,
the
biggest fallacy of the whole thing, whether it's Sagarin or anybody, any other rating system, is if they go only by wins and losses instead of considering that a one-point loss in overtime is almost a win, you know, and
right.
It shouldn't be zero. It should be something other than zero. And the team that won shouldn't get 100%. But that's what you get with all. If you go wins and losses, you don't. You're not making any adjustments for how the teams really played.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree, and that's why one of my three pillars of, I call it the GVI, the Gordon Voigt Index, which is traditionally very off. Not a very good.
The Gordon Voigt Index. Is that trademarked?
It's trademarked as of now. I call it. Nobody else can trademark that. That's why one of my favorite data points, Lauren, is BPI, is ESPN's metric, which I love because for that exact same reason. It says that wins and losses is really an inefficient way of looking at outcomes, and that's the kind of the trap that RPI falls into a lot of times.
Yeah.
It's all or nothing. And so BPI says, hey, was your best player in the game when you lost? You know, that will have input into how we rate it. What was the altitude of the game? Like, it gets down into that granular level.
Wow.
Of evaluating these teams, and that's one thing I really like about that.
So are we now to look at Duke and Kentucky as the likely finalists in this thing, or the Final Four, or two of the Final Four?
You know, I got a little bit hesitant to put Kentucky farther than the Elite Eight. My Final Four was Gonzaga, who was an undervalued team, from what I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
I had Gonzaga, Virginia, Duke, and I'm missing one.
Nova?
Not Kansas. Villanova. Yeah
Villanova.
You.
I think Villanova is a definite favorite at this point, but Kentucky's got a pretty good deal if they only have to play the winner of the Loyola-Nevada game if they beat Kansas State. I mean, that's a Final Four team.
Right, which is pretty incredible. How about that double 217 area code connection we have in that game? We got Danville's Dante Ingram and then Champaign's Jordan Carolyn. That's pretty cool, huh?
Yep. Yeah,
you got somebody to root for either way. I mean, I think Loyola certainly has captured the heart of the state because there's nobody else,
mm-hmm.
and Sister
there's
Jean
nobody
is
else
the story.
Any other year either.
But Nevada is kind of a Cinderella as well. So I don't know which nationwide. I don't know where the heartstrings are going.
Yeah, you got to wonder. I mean, Sister Jean, come on. I mean, she's the trump card, I think, in this game here because I mean, who wouldn't want to root for Sister Jean? She is awesome.
She had the best line of the whole tournament. They said, "You're nationally famous, sister." She says, "You mean internationally famous." She nailed them, didn't she?
That's right.
Awesome. But I like that she's, you know, that she's a realist. She only has a going to the Sweet 16. After that, she said, "You guys are going to lose."
And Loyola is watching the admissions skyrocket. So,
That happened to some other schools.
I mean,
Butler, did you see how Butler jumped?
Oh yeah.
From those the year they had the 2 years where they finished second, they had an enormous jump in the number of people enrolling.
This is a passion of my, kind of a passion topic of mine. Is that even if you despise the institution of athletics in our country, there is no denying that the single best way to market your academic institution is through athletics. And the school that I started off at, you guys know me as an Illinois grad, but I actually started off at Baylor. Same year as Robert Griffin. Applications were 25,000 per year. Team goes to the Elite Eight, loses to Duke, the eventual national champion. Robert Griffin was the Heisman. Applications doubled to 50,000, I believe. So
wow.
It happened at Baylor, too. If you get on TV screens and you get on the bracket that kids are filling out in their math class, the applications skyrocket. So Butler, Baylor, remember UW-Milwaukee had a big spike when they went to the Sweet 16. I mean, there's no denying that athletics is an incredible way to market your institution.
Didn't even notice that we were going to hit two of your sweet spots here, Gordon, in analytics for the bracket and how much athletics is a front door for the front porch for a university. Let's talk about another sweet.
I'm a Renaissance man of very obscure things. That's all I can say.
Well, let's talk about other things that are passions for you in your job. You covered Illinois high school basketball in the state championships this past weekend in Peoria. Lauren and I have been talking about this the last 2 days. Did you see Io up close, and what were your impressions of him as a basketball player?
Absolutely, I did. In fact, we've been following him pretty closely since this time last year when they won the title. So I've got a chance to get to know him and his family, who are great people, and his coaching staff there at Morgan Park. Really just they've got a great thing going with that culture they have. And one thing that really impressed me, I mean, a lot's been said about when he dominated the AAU circuit this past year, and he has the ability to take over, but I think one of the most valuable things about him is that he does what the team needs to win. So, I mean, you're talking about a team that had 7, 8, 9 Division I caliber athletes on it. And at no point in that tournament and any time I've seen them play, which is about 6 times, I'd say, at no point did I ever say, wow, one of these blue chip kids is really hogging the ball. That just doesn't exist. And so I think that's going to really help him when he gets to the Big Ten level. And he is playing with all Power 5 recruits again. I think that he does a tremendous job of playing within the flow. If they need to hit a 3, he hits a 3. If they need him to take it to the rack, he takes it to the rack. But he's never outside of himself, and I think that's probably his best asset as a player.
Gordon Voigt is with us. You can follow him on Twitter, at Gordon Voigt, V-O-I-T, and you see him on TV at WAND as well.
Well, I was going to get around to the whole thing about defense, because we saw Cincinnati lose, and we saw Virginia lose, and now I'm wondering, are defensive teams more vulnerable in the tournament, or is this just a fluke? I mean, West Virginia's got a defense, and Syracuse has got based on defense. I mean, so maybe it's just those two teams just happen to fall apart. What do you think?
Yeah, I would kind of agree with the latter there. I think there's a little bit of confirmation bias in play there. You know, whenever a defensive team flames out, that's a really easy thing to point to. You brought up the Syracuse example. I think that's something that would refute that notion, because defense clearly was the winner. I mean, Miles Bridges had no idea what to do with that zone, as great of a player as he is.
Where was Jaren Jackson, by the way? Where was Jaren Jackson in that game?
You mean future Chicago Bull Jaren Jackson?
Did he show up or what? He was 0 for 4, I know, in the statistics,
right.
But he didn't play much the second half, did he?
I don't think so. But, yeah, it's interesting, you know. So I think defense clearly has the ability to throw a team for a loop. But I think that there's enough examples of defense also winning in the tournament. Clearly that was a huge part of UNC Greensboro's success in that first round game. But I think that, you know, it's easy to say, wow, yeah, Virginia just didn't have the horsepower, you know, and the ability to score it, and that's why they lost. But, I mean, it's a team that just thrashed the ACC. I mean, a 4-game lead, what was it, 3-4 games in the ACC? Mm-hmm. So I think that that was just the ping pong ball bounced in the 1% chance. And I would hesitate to say the defense lost in that game.
Gordon, personally. I know you got to get running. Before I let you go, what has the follow-up been for you since you put out there the hashtag We Need a Game with the a promotional event for Illinois and the state and basketball, with pitting Chicago against the rest of the state? How's that been going?
Extremely well. I mean, every time I bring it up in conversation, these state tournaments are a great chance to bounce ideas off people, and people light up. I'm not trying to make it sound like a better idea than it is, but people have been extremely supportive. I've started to enter into preliminary discussions about sponsorships and who might help organize the weekends. You know, I'm hoping to build it into a little bit more than just a game. But yeah, just for those who don't know at home, this would be the top players in Chicago against the top players from the rest of the states. There's such tremendous basketball talent here in the state, and yet there's never been a basketball game that has brought everybody together. We do a great job of reaching pockets of Metro East St. Louis, Chicago area, the suburbs, or Decatur area, Champaign area, Springfield. But there's never been a game that's tied together. And you could have a roster of 20 Division I athletes on the court fighting for their region. I think that would be an incredible way to celebrate the skill involved, and it would also be a great way to celebrate the mentorship. You know, there's a lot of really rough communities in our state. But what's the one sphere of positivity, even in the worst of the worst neighborhoods? It's these basketball teams. You've got men who are stepping into these roles, serving these kids, doing incredible jobs. They're held accountable. They have better grades than the rest of the school. It's a place where they belong. This is one thing that we do extremely well, not just talking skill, but just in terms of humans helping other humans. We do it extremely well in the sport, so let's celebrate that. That's the whole premise.
I love the concept. I love your spirit behind it there, Gordon. Hey, we appreciate you spending a few minutes with us, and we'll catch you on TV soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Anytime you want to learn about my, I don't know if you'd call it the Joker from Batman, but anytime you want to hear me go off the rails, just bring up bracketology. I'm happy to talk.
All right. Appreciate it. Gordon
thanks,
Voigt.
Guys.
Yeah, no problem. Gordon Voigt from WAND-TV. Good to have him on. We come back. We'll hear a little bit from Illinois baseball. Also, Natalie Walsh from Illinois women's gymnastics. Sports talk here on a Tuesday.
Wednesday at NewsGazette.com, listen to Tate Lines Unedited. This week, Lauren Tate reminisces about Bruce Weber as Illinois' coach.
.543 Sports Talk on News Talk 1400. Scott and Lauren with you. Illinois baseball has now had three consecutive Players of the Week for the Big Ten. Most recently, Bren Spillane, who went 9 of 15, had a 2,000 OPS, including a three-homer game this past week. Earlier today, I caught up with the Illini first baseman. Talking with Bren Spillane, the first baseman for the Illini. Congratulations, Bren, Player of the Week for the Big Ten. Been putting up some eye-popping numbers. How does it feel?
Feels good. Seeing the ball well, and it's cool to see that it's helping the team win.
Is there something different for you this year compared to the years past? Because it seems like this is a year where you're putting it together.
Not necessarily. I mean, I've known I've had it in me. Just a matter of basically going out and doing it. But as far as the actual play itself, I know I've been capable of doing it.
Where does power come from? I've seen you hit some balls the opposite field, and at first glance, it seems like a pop fly off the bat, and then it just keeps carrying and carrying. And I'm not just talking about wind. I'm talking about the power is there, but something seems like it's not a huge swing. Where's that power come from?
To be honest with you, I'm not too sure. I've kind of had that ability since I was a little kid, and I've been making adjustments in the off season to try to be able to utilize that more and more and shortening up my swing just to be consistent with it.
Imagine now you're going to be at the top of scouting reports for opposing pitchers. Are you seeing anything? I don't want you to give away any secrets here, but are you seeing different approaches to you now at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen a little bit more off speed, but it's nothing to completely change anything over, but yeah.
You don't strike me as a guy who's seeking the spotlight, seeking a lot of attention, but it's coming your way now. How do you handle that?
I mean, just the same as normal. You just go through your normal routine. It's cool to see, but you just really don't think about it. It's just, yeah, like I said, it's just kind of cool to see.
And for you and your team now having a lot of success here in the, I think we could still call it the early season as Big Ten hasn't started yet. Have you guys talked about how to stay in a winning mindset? Because early success came, but sometimes it can be a challenge then to keep that success going.
Yeah, I mean, it's just showing up to the ballpark with the same mindset every day that we're going to go out and we're going to win. I think just in general, this whole group of guys, we all come in with a different confidence than a lot of us have seen before. We genuinely think that we're going to win every single day we show up to the park, depending on, and it doesn't matter who we play.
Brent, thanks for your time. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Brent Spillane, Illinois baseball in action tomorrow. And again, it's a first pitch at 1 p.m. over at Illinois Field. They'll take on CSU Northridge, Cal State Northridge. 1 o'clock, not 4:30, 1 o'clock. Illinois State was supposed to be the opponent today. Boy, I'm having trouble here. So the Illini were supposed to play a baseball game today, and that got rearranged until April 4th. But tomorrow they're still playing their game. They've just moved it up to 1 o'clock. I do this for a living, apparently. And you'll hear it here on DWS with Dave Lone on the call.
Makes sense to me.
I guess so. This team, from the get-go, has not struck me as the team that was a 50-plus win team in 2015. But there's a lot of talent, and it feels like they could do something special here. I think they certainly will be in the running to win the Big Ten and get into the NCAAs.
Well, I will say to you that the 2015 team had dramatically better pitching, dramatically better. Now, I'm not saying that, and Jay was the relief pitcher, and he was their best pitcher, and only pitched an inning a game, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But they had good starters that year, really solid. I think this team is virtually comparable to them at the other eight positions. I think they're comparable.
I would go with that. They haven't settled on the DH, and that's been a revolving door.
That is true. They have not. And that's a position you should have a good hitter.
Yeah, that's the ironic part. Yeah. And I think there's guys that have been making cases for it. You're right. There's not Joey Gerber is a pretty good closer, and he's got that herky-jerky delivery. But they don't have the lights-out starting pitching right now, but they do have starters that are keeping you in the ball games, and I think, by and mm-hmm. large, that's going to mm-hmm. going to get you more wins than
it's
not
be
during
a lot
the season.
Close games.
When it gets to postseason and everybody's seeing each other's ace, and aces tend to shut down the opposing lineup, that's where you go, is the starting pitching a run or two not as good? That can be a...
They seem to have pretty good control. That there just aren't enough... Now, I'm talking in general here, not enough strikeouts. And that would indicate that they just don't have the pitches to put them away. But it's early, and by the way, let's not judge baseball teams when it's this cold. It's hard to know.
No kidding.
You know, it's just hard to know how good...
Well, I was with them on the first day of the year, and it was kind of like this. Mm-hmm. And they just played okay. When they went to warmer weather or indoors, they were a totally different squad.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully as the weather warms up, that means good things for the team as well. All right, we turn to Illinois women's gymnastics. Admittedly, we don't give a lot of attention to this sport, but we are glad to do so right now with head coach Natalie Walsh, who joins us now in her first season coming up on the Big Ten Championships at the State Farm Center this Saturday. Natalie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Your first season at Illinois, but not your first season, of course, coaching. How would you sum up your first year here at the U of I?
Oh, it's been outstanding. I've absolutely loved the transition and the athletes, and it's just been a really, really awesome experience, and I'm really proud of the team for how well they've done this year.
You have three all Big Ten gymnasts, two on the first team, one on the second team. And what has your squad, who has been sort of with that, you know, is there one that you say, well, that's sort of our squad leader, that's the one we really lean on?
I would say we really are a team that everybody plays a really important part and everybody has a role and everybody's valuable. And we, in gymnastics, you can have some athletes that actually compete all four of the events. And so the two people that have led with the most points are sophomore Ray Balthazar and freshman Nicole Biondi. So they definitely have been big leaders on the floor for us.
You know, I got to admit, I'm a little bit ignorant. I even have family that are in the gymnastics world and do some judging and all that. But when I see scores come across, I think for the person who's not familiar, scores – Well, I don't understand. Was that a blowout? Was that tight? From how your team has been scoring, what does that tell you about how your team is this year? Are they dominating opponents? Are they tight matches or meets, I should say?
It's been both. Yeah, sometimes we've had close matches, but this particular match that we just came from, we went to the Big Five, which is five of the Big Ten schools seeing each other all at one time. We did a blowout there, which was really exciting. We went into our last rotation and ended up being in the lead over a point, and 1 point is a lot in gymnastics, so we definitely had the opportunity and sealed the deal in our last rotation on beam, and so we came away with the first place title and are going into conference here on Saturday in the night session, which is what was on the line for at Big Five this past weekend.
Well, Natalie, who are the teams from the Big Ten that figure to give you the most trouble?
Well, Michigan is always very strong. Nebraska is always very strong. Everyone thought that Nebraska would win our Big Five, but we took that title, so that was very exciting. And then, honestly, every time we've seen those two teams, we have not been far behind before. So I think that we have a huge confidence boost just walking away with having won this past weekend. And now we know that we just need to do what we did one more time, and we should be good to go.
Which events do you see your, would you call your strength?
We are a very strong beam team. A lot of times in gymnastics, so many people think beam is the make it or break it event, or the fans don't even want to watch because they're nervous. But we have a dynamic beam team and a very, very dynamic floor and bars team as well. They're very clean. They do what they can do, and they do it very well. So I think that you will see on Saturday, we start on floor. The team will set the bar very high, and I'm really excited about that.
Natalie, for folks that are thinking, oh, maybe I want to go check this out because the Big Ten Championships are at the State Farm Center on Saturday at 2 o'clock. They've never been to an event like this. How do you go into it? What might you want somebody to know about how to watch and enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are actually in the 7 p.m. session. There's two sessions for Big Ten. So just make sure all of Champaign knows that we're not in the 2 o'clock session. Illinois is at 7. And when you go to gymnastics meet, be loud. You can be rowdy. You can cheer. You can chant with the team. We do a lot of chanting ILL and asking the crowd to yell INI right back at us. And a little bit of the rules of gymnastics, if someone's unfamiliar, is we do get to throw away one score on each event. So we count 5 out of the 6, and we take the best 5 and 5 scores out of all 4 events and add them together. And our goal as a team is always to be above 196 points at the end of the meet. We're shooting for a 197. That's the goal.
And what can come out of this for folks who are unfamiliar? You know, obviously you want to get to the NCAAs. Is this the next step for that?
For gymnastics, if you win your conference, you do not get an automatic berth into postseason at the NCAA championship level. But we have already qualified to NCAA regionals, which is in 2 weeks from Saturday. So we want to come out with the best score possible, which will boost our rankings. And just we will on Monday find out where we go for regionals. So the girls have already locked in with the regional spot. So that's another very, very exciting and relieving thing that happened with our meet this last weekend. So we don't need to go into Big Ten worried about anything else. We just showed up our home court advantage and be in our own bubble and wow the crowds and the judges.
Well, Natalie, we appreciate a few minutes of your time, and I'll remind everybody there, because I misspoke, 7 o'clock to see the Illini.
Yes.
On Saturday night at the State Farm Center, although there is also a 2 o'clock session, but you get that coveted evening spot. So best of luck, Natalie,
yes.
And thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, Natalie Walsh, she is the head coach of Illini Women's Gymnastics. You can follow her on Twitter at Natalie with a D as in dog, Natalie Walsh. And you can follow Illini Women's Gymnastics at Illini W Gym. We're back in a moment. On a penny for your thoughts tomorrow, post-election talk, a new exhibit at the Lincoln Museum. And do you have something you want to preserve? We have an expert to help you with that. 9 a.m. tomorrow morning on DWS. Down the stretch they come. Scott and Lauren with you on this edition of Sports Talk. Lauren, your Tate Lines coming out tomorrow, your podcast.
Oh, I just, it was just, this is Rosso's idea. He wanted me to talk about, well, it is. I mean, and he wanted me to talk about Bruce and you know.
Bruce Weber.
And I don't have any great stories about Bruce. He was a good guy that just you know,
it's amazing the vitriol that's come out about him.
Yeah.
You know, some people are singing his praises this week. He's in the Sweet 16, and there's others are saying, they're basically saying he's a fraud.
Well,
I mean, he just beat a couple of easier. He had an easier path to the Sweet 16.
Look, he doesn't have great players. Can you name three players in the last in all the time he's been there? Can you name three players on the Kansas State team?
No.
On the Kansas State team.
I can name you one.
He has had one draftee.
Beasley or something?
No. The guy's name, I can tell you, if you give me some time, it's Owundo, Wesley Owundo. He's the only player drafted. He was drafted 33rd a year ago. And in the same time, Kansas has had eight drafted, mostly in the first round. And Kansas had vastly better players, and they've beaten him 13 out of 15. Which is, to nobody's surprise, the Kansas State's not as good as Kansas.
Check out the podcast, Tate Lines. It'll be at WDWS.com tomorrow. Thanks, Gordon Voigt, Bren Spillane, Natalie Walsh, Blake Landa behind the scenes. Election coverage coming up after the news. This is News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station at 6 o'clock. Good night.